We are live from the Hof van Lieren, and today we invited Professor in Logistics and Transport, Roel Gevaerts. We are Charlotte and Celine. You are listening to Profcast.
Professor Gevaerts, welcome. You did your PhD on innovations in last mile, reverse and waste logistics. Could you give us a basic introduction into your research?
Yes, well, I started my PhD research back in 2007, already more than 16 years ago. I was a graduate from the master's here in Antwerp from at that moment still applied economics. And I got a question from Professor Heidi van der Voorde if I wanted to make a PhD about a very, very broad topic, innovations in logistics. And after, let's say, one year and a half research, I noted that a lot of things were happening in what was at that moment described as e-commerce. But at that moment, you need to know that, for example, companies like an Amazon or a Bol.com were still very small companies which were only selling books or DVDs. Can you imagine DVDs? And not more than that, but it looked like it was going to be a big thing in the next decade to two decades. So a growing e-commerce sector. And at that moment, I decided let's focus there on logistics related to everything which is related to e-commerce. So bringing parcels, goods to your home or any other location. And then, of course, linked to that, the returns and the waste related to that. So a bit the how would logistics take place from that new sector, the e-commerce sector. And so let's say 5 years after that, I obtained my PhD in last mile reverse and waste logistics. And at that moment, I was the first PhD in Belgium who obtained his PhD about a specific topic, last mile logistics, e-commerce logistics. So, and that's, to be honest, how it all happened now 16 years ago.
You currently teach in logistics, transport, distribution and global supply chain. Quite a lot of fields to cover, but what is your favorite course to teach?
Well, if you look to supply chain is, of course, very wide. And I need to say, although already as a kid, I was interested in everything which was, I said everything that moves on wheels with an engine. I was always interested into that. So I need to say the supply chain is a topic which I like a lot. But if I need to choose, it's the last mile that is really the closest to my heart. And next to that, also air transportation, but that's more the field of collega De Wulf. So my focus and real, my heart is close to last mile logistics and e-commerce logistics.
I think that is something that's become quite apparent in the past years as well, because you've made quite a lot of media appearances, especially, I think, when it comes to last mile. But we've seen you've often taken sort of a bridging role between the academic world on the one hand and the corporate political one on the other. How important is that for you, that valorization, that making people understand research?
Well, I think it's a very important topic. I'm one of the more younger professors, let's say, and I think it's today as a professor, you cannot be anymore the professor of 30 to 40 years ago who had a big office with many assistants and he or she did research and that was it. I think today a professor needs to do research, especially in the field like applied economics, businesses. We are not doing research in pharmaceuticals or in let's say medicine or pharma, where you can invent every day a new kind of technology. We are there to, let's say, to make sure that we follow trends, we do research what is happening to make it everything more sustainable. And I think it's very important for us professors to make sure that what we do with the research we do, that we can valorize it, that we do valorization with it. And with valorization, I mean, not only making sure that we can have PhDs that do research about applied topics, but also that we can give something back to community. because community is paying our wages in one way or another. It's important that we can use what we study or what we see, that we can give it partly back to community, of course. And for that, I think it's important to stay as close as possible to companies and to also to help them if media has questions about topics like transportation supply chains, or if there is uncertainty about these things, that at least we can give some frame, or we can tell people you need to think about that, or not everything is black or white. And that's a role for us as professors, I think. So yes, for me, valorization is key. It's also something you see happening worldwide. If you look to the really the top universities where everybody speaks about, like the MITs of these worlds, if you look to their professors, they are also playing that role more and more, not staying inside their office, but really coming outside and make sure that what we do, that at least we show and try to give something back to the community. And then if there are questions about like the social background of parcel deliveries in Belgium, or like the safety, the data safety of certain apps like Temu, then it's to us to give a very specific, open-minded advice to the community how to think about it and how to look to these things. I think really that's very important for us. And like, for example, the podcast you are now recording, that's another typical example where I think that valorization really can help to give more framing to people to explain what we are doing, how we are doing it, and why we are doing it. That's for me, key. Yes.
Well, it seems the logistics sector in general and last mile in particular has changed over the past few years. What changes have you seen, and where do you think we're heading in the future?
Well, if you look to logistics and the changes of logistics, you see a lot of things happening, but maybe the most important one, and that's also the one that I tell my students, is that if I ask my parents, if you go 30, 40 years back, then if you want to buy something special, a specialty product, so a product that you don't buy every day, you in most cases you needed to take a car, drive to a store, and you need and if you entered the store, you were hoping that the product was there. And if the product was not there, you had to order it, wait on it for weeks, or you had to go to another store. And that was a bit how logistics and e-commerce worked at that moment. So it was what you call typically from a logistical and business perspective, a push model, where retailers or retailing companies were pushing products to the chain, to a retail store, and you as a consumer, you needed to go there, and voila, that was it. That was the assortment. Today, I mean, if I look to my students in the aulas, and I ask them what is the waiting time you want to wait on any kind of product you order online, in most cases it's not much longer than 1 day or 2 days in some, and you can order every single thing you can imagine. If you think about it, you can order it. And that's only the last 15 to 20 years that it has been changing. And we are really going to what you call a pull model, where the consumers are the boss of everything. They decide when they want to have a product, where they want to have the product, how they want to have the product, sometimes also at which price they want to have it, because you can compare easily. So we are really going to an economy where consumer is boss, and where the consumer wants to have a high level of convenience. He or she wants to have it immediately at low price, etc. And even there are examples, we had it 1 year ago, but they went bankrupt. But in some other cities worldwide, you see retail stores where you can order something online and you have it within 15 minutes. If I order now here in this room a Starbucks coffee, there are cities where I can have within 15 minutes a Starbucks coffee for me delivered here at this desk. In the Netherlands, for example, if you order something online, there is a sentence that says, if you have a product ordered online and they don't drop it at your doorstep, but in a locker box or at a pickup point, it needs to be at slipper distance. That means that you can come from your couch, but consumers today, they don't want to walk longer than 200 to 300 meters to pick something from a collection point. And in the old days, yeah, it was normal that you took a car, you drove 5-6 kilometers or even to a big city to buy your stuff. And that's really a big change. And also that means that logistics, the whole logistical supply chain network needs to adapt to it. In the old days, it was easy. You took a truck, you put pallets in it, the truck drove to the retail store, and that was it. Today, they need to bring it to your door when you want it, how you want it. And today as well, sustainable and ecological friendly. So that's a big change. And only 15, 20 years.
Yeah, actually, I visited an Asian country this year and I had the exact same experience. You wake up, you pick up your phone, you order a coffee, and 50 minutes later, it's in front of your door. It's insane. Yeah. Is that something that we could potentially be going to as well?
You need to know, if you look to the last mile, so the last part of your supply chain, in Western countries, the highest cost within the last mile is a labor cost. Labor cost is around 80% of your last mile cost. So what you see is that the lower your average labor cost, the more flexible the last mile is. Because I was exactly like you. I was in Asia last year and I was on a conference, and I always give a small present if I'm invited. And I normally bring Belgian chocolates, like the chocolate seashells. Of course, I forgot to order them in Belgium. So I ordered them there in Abu Dhabi on a Saturday evening at 11 p.m. Belgian seashells, chocolate ones, in Amazon at Amazon. And the next morning, 6 a.m. on a Sunday, they were delivered at my hotel.
That's unimaginable.
I mean, that's insane. But there I need to say that it depends on how you look from it, from a social point of view or from a convenience point of view. But I need to say that in Asia, the last mile and e-commerce convenience is extremely high. If I ask to my Asian students at IMS, for example, what is your longest waiting time that you want to wait on a product? In most cases, they say half a day max on any given product. For us as Europeans, due to the high labor wages, we know Sunday early morning work is very expensive. There it isn't. Like I say, social perspective is something else than convenience. But you might see that worldwide you see differences, but in the Asian market, convenience is today the driver in the last mile and in e-commerce. And we are behind, yes.
Okay. Maybe we can jump into it. You mentioned it earlier, the Temu app, because we're speaking of Asia as well. You've been asked to give your feedback on that by several media providers. So we're curious as well. Like, could you tell us a little bit more about the app and should we be worried?
Well, the Temu app is an app like you have, it's a shopping app like you have the Alibabas and you have the Amazons. But the idea about the Temu app is that they want to attract as quick as possible mainly young shoppers, mainly student shoppers, even minor ones, to make sure that you buy products with them. But the idea of the Temu app is not really at this moment to sell products. The idea is to capture as much as possible data from all their consumers. And it can go very far. It can go about which products you like, but even you can give them information how you think about your political background, how you answer certain products, which kind of people you like, which kind of people you don't like, depending on how you are, if you are an impulse buyer, because they know exactly, they count the number of seconds before you do an order, for example. And by that, they know that if they can push you in a certain direction, that you might be a customer that buys quickly, for example. And it can go very far. So at this moment, that app really is there to convince as much as possible consumers to download the app and be as much hours as possible on the app playing games ordering products, doing all kind of making, sending the app to colleagues to make sure, or friends, to make sure that other ones also download it. And the more hours you are on the app, the higher your discount is on certain products. And there, the funny thing is that if you look to the product reviews itself today, the products itself are considered as overall low quality to very low quality, because for them it's not about the products, for them it's about making a huge database with all potential young consumers that on the long term they can use it for themselves, they can sell it to other parties, or even can sell it to, for example, insurance companies or any other kind of data-driven companies. So the danger there is that due to the fact that all those apps, because there are many apps are doing data collection, also Amazon is doing it, Google is doing it, Facebook, Meta is doing it, Alibaba is doing it. But the danger of it is that all those apps today are mainly located in Silicon Valley in the US or in Asia, China, which means that formally they are under legislation, the local legislation here as well, because they collect the data here. But we all know that once the data is on servers outside of Europe, the chances of control or the chances of making sure that there are no privacy breaches, they are limited. So on the long term, that really is an issue, because today in Europe, European web shops or European apps by far are not collected the same amount of data as the Asian and the US ones. And that's on the long term a real risk that where we as consumers should be a bit worried about. And especially if you have kids, make sure that they are not spending too much hours on that kind of apps. I know it might sound easy. I know it isn't, because TikTok, etc. is doing sometimes a bit the same. But it's something where we should look to.
Let's jump back in time from a contemporary app to concepts as retro shopping, retro logistics, and retro mobility. We immediately picture us in 60s dresses style going to our small local store on rollerblades to buy candy or something else. Are we far off with that image?
Well, if you look today to certain cities and you see how people are, or consumers are going to shops, you see, if you go 20, 30 years back, if you look to the city of Antwerp, many people were taking their cars. They stopped in front of their retail store, or they drove to a big retail store with a parking lot, and then you went shopping, and that was how it was done. Today, you see, if you go on the streets, you see many young families driving with family bikes or cargo bikes to do their shopping. People are much more walking to stores than before, because if you look in the 70s and the 80s, every small city and every corner of the street, there was a kind of a small grocery store. I mean, that was something that was there. And everybody went shopping there. Then we went to the 80s and 90s and to 2000s. There the idea was you go to big retail stores, the big Delhaize's, the Carrefour, Hypers, I mean, at that moment still GB, but the really the big ones with a huge assortment, and the small grocery stores stopped or went bankrupt, etc. What you see now is that you are doing again we are going again the other direction. The big retail stores, the big Carrefour, Hypers, the big Delhaize's are today under pressure. We saw what Delhaize decided some months ago. And on every corner of the street, you see small shops opening. If you look to the neighborhood here of the university, when I was studying, there were not really big, a huge amount of small retail stores. Now, in 200-300 meters around the university, I can name immediately 3-4 small stores that opened the last 10 years. That's a typical thing that you see. So we are going back to smaller stores, and we are going back to where small amounts of products were also delivered at home. For example, in the old days when I was speaking to my grandparents, they had the soup man, they had the milkman. then it all those things stopped in most cases for, let's say, 20, 30 years. And now you can order again everything you can imagine online for small amounts, shop local, act local. And for example, what you see there, for example, you have a company that is called Andi. And what do they do? They deliver only drinks to your doorstep. And they position themselves as, again, the company that is bringing the drinks to your doorstep as in the 50s and 60s. And I believe that we are going back to a world where you have potentially less cars, where people want to have that convenience to don't make much kilometers for a kind of product. And that was a bit like in the 50s and the 60s. Again, the assortment now is bigger, the IT is completely different than in those days, because now it's all IT driven, of course. But in a certain way, I believe that we are going back a bit to basics, where you stay closer, and you see that in a lot of things. Even you can, if you speak today about, for example, that families and people should reduce their air travel, that's also a bit going back to the 40s and the 50s, where taking a plane was special. I'm not saying we need to go there, but I'm just stating there is a reference. Also about the fact where some doctors are saying we need to reduce the consumption of meat, for example. If you go back to the 40s and the 50s, people were much more, I will not say vegetarian because they were eating meat, but on average, the number of meat consumption at these times was also very similar, less than it is today. And that are many examples where I think we go back to basics, and you see that also in consumption and in logistics. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because I think the field that you're working in sometimes can be very contradictory to the concept of sustainability. Yeah. Speaking of last mile, and people expect everything within a day. And how do you find that in your research, that contrast between the expectations versus sustainability?
Well, the fact is that in the research, sometimes you hear in the media, or sometimes I also have these discussions with politicians. If you look, for example, today, the last mile, and you order something online, that some politicians say you need to have your product delivered in a parcel locker or in a collection point, because that's more sustainable. To be honest, if you live in a city and you have a parcel or a product delivered to your doorstep with a cargo bike, that's by far the most sustainable delivery you can ever have. I mean, and then even if you have it delivered within 1 hour, if a product is collected in a nearby shop, 1-2 kilometers from your doorstep, and it's brought to you by a cargo bike, that is really, it's one of the most sustainable delivery options you have. And what you see there, and that's why it's important as we as professors that we give that information as well to the public and to ministers, that not everything is black or white. And yes, e-commerce sometimes has, or last mile can have, a negative background on sustainability, but it's with everything. If you drive with your car 10 kilometers to collect one product in a store, where you could have ordered it online, put it in a van or in a bike, where the average distance between points is less than the kilometers you need to do, you're still more sustainable than before. So that's something. But of course, we are in logistics, we are in supply chain. There will be always a kind of, I will not call it pollution, but there will always be a certain safety risk. There will be always a kind of potential emission, because sound emissions are also emissions in logistics, which you should take into account. But let's be honest, we are still humans. We eat, we buy products. All kind of e-commerce, all kind of commerce, we need to make it as sustainable as possible, but it's also still important that we can buy the product and the food that we want to buy, and that we can have, at least that we don't go back there to 100 years ago, where there were where we stayed just in a whole house for 10 kilometers around the door, and that was it. So the way is to make everything as sustainable as possible, and that's where we are, to help both society, politicians, and also companies.
Maybe jumping to another topic that you are working on, you recently joined the Top Team Zero Emission Freight Transport. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
It's very catchy.
Yes.
But what is the mission of this top team?
Well, the idea of that mission is that we need to advise with a group of experts, and there are experts from academic, business, society, etc., that we need to advise the Flemish government and Minister Lydia Peters about how she should deal with trying to make logistics zero emission by the next 3 to 7 years, by 2025, 2030. Because of course, if you speak about it, you can say, yeah, electrify everything. That's the easiest, there you can say that's the easy part, but, it's of course much wider than that, because if you, would ask me, is electrification the way to go, for example, to make it zero emission? As well, there we are there as professors to say that not everything is black or white. It's a bit with like, if you need to buy today a new car as well, do you need to buy an electrified one or still a combustion engine? The thing, of course, there is you need to look from where is the energy coming you put in. For example, if you buy a new Tesla in Poland, for example, there is a high chance that your Tesla will drive on coal. Energy made of coal, then in a certain way that's worse than driving a diesel car. And that are all things that you need to take into account. And if you look to technologies to make logistics and mobility zero emission, you can think about electrification indeed with battery power. But there is also the next potential big thing is, for example, hydrogen and fuel cells. There are biofuels also that can be used. And we are there to advise the minister to make sure that if she takes decisions, that that they are in a bigger frame of energy supply, which technologies are there in the next 5 to 10 years. Because if you not take now a wrong decision, we still might need to cope with it the next 10, 20 to 30 years if we take wrong decisions. And to be honest, one of the main issues today is the network indeed in Belgium, but not only in Belgium, in the whole of Europe, it's an issue. Because now we saw that the last 5 to 10 years, there was a real push to make sure that consumer cars was shifted towards electrification, and the Teslas and all that kind of examples. But to be honest, if you look to freight transportation, there wasn't really a push. That push is only now starting, so the electrified trucks. You need to know that the investment for an electrified truck is 3 times the amount versus a diesel truck. So an electrified truck is 300,000 euros, a diesel truck is 100,000 euros. So that's a huge impact. But the main problem is that there are not many areas where there is so much electrified supply, let's say it that way, or where the networks are big enough to make sure that trucks can charge and recharge. There is, for example, an example now in the Netherlands, the amusement park, the Efteling, they want to build some new attractions, but they are limited in what they can build the next 10 years, because in the neighborhood of the Efteling, multiple transportation companies want to have fast charging devices, and the network is not strong enough, so the government had to choose between the transportation or the Efteling. And so Efteling now received the message, we will need to reduce our investments because the electrified network that is available for us will be limited due to electrification of transportation. And we will see that as well in Flanders and Belgium and Antwerp if we don't watch out, if we take wrong decisions. And there we are, there to help and advise the government.
Wow, choosing between the Efteling and transport, that must have been a very tough decision, I can imagine.
Yeah, I didn't have to give the advice, so that was a positive point. But but that are things where if we don't watch out, we might need to take similar decisions. Again.
This was Profcast with Roel Gevaerts. Thank you for listening. Do you want to hear more? Then be sure to visit our website www.uantwerpen.be-profcast.